You can now watch The Good Word with Goodwill on Yahoo Sports Network, our first ever streaming TV channel. Yahoo Sports Network is available to stream on leading fast services. It's also streaming live 24/7 on yahoosports.tv, where you can catch all of the shows on your phone or your browser. On today's episode of Good Word, did Kawhi Leonard circumvent the NBA salary cap with extra benefits from a dummy company, or is it just smart business by the Clippers? And Kawhi, where does Uncle Dennis fit in all this, if at all? We also talk about LeBron and his new Nike commercial, LeBron and Kyrie, and Michael Porter Jr. with some very saucy takes. All that and much more coming up right now. Welcome to The Good Word. My name is Vincent Goodwill, senior NBA reporter for Yahoo Sports. A bit of business before we get into today's show. We are, of course, on YouTube, so don't forget to rate, review, subscribe to us there, as well as all the places you consume your audio podcast. My man Dan Titus is joining me today. We was going to have a nice, light, and fun day, right? You got the Detroit hat on, looking like Doughboy from Boys in the Hood and all that stuff, man. What's going on?
What's up, Vin? I had to show love to, I don't know, I saw this hat because I'm a big Dilla fan. So, yeah, definitely. I knew you would appreciate it just being from the D. But, man, we got bombs getting dropped, man. First things first in the morning, man. What's up with Kawhi?
I mean, I don't know. We're going to find out. Like, for those who haven't heard, Pablo Torre finds out, a podcast that has done some really good work over the past few months investigating a lot of different things, stumbled upon Kawhi Leonard possibly receiving extra benefits funneled by the LA Clippers through one of their presenting sponsors, being paid allegedly, apparently according to paperwork, $28 million for a no-show job. I don't know, a lot of you are like, man, Kawhi Leonard don't show up to his regular job. Why'd this be any different? Right. Let's put all that to the side. But $28 million, like, it would pretty much circumvent the salary cap for this one company called Aspiration. It was being paid out to a LLC called KL2, which was run by Kawhi's uncle, Dennis Robertson. This was not, it's important to note, Dan, and for everybody else, this is not part of Kawhi going to the Clippers in 2019, when he left the Toronto Raptors. This was alleged to be part of him re-signing an extension, not quite along the same time length, but in 2021, before the 2022 season began, where pretty much it looks like from Pablo's investigation or his group's investigation that he didn't have to do anything and not show up, not do anything. And it's important to note, and here's another point before I turn it over to you, Titus. Aspiration is the name or the patch on the LA Clippers jersey. And Aspiration just most recently claimed bankruptcy, so they won't have the rest of the money to pay Kawhi Leonard, allegedly. So you just tell me, I know I gave you a lot of information. I'm sure you've done your own research and have your own thoughts about it. What do you think of all this?
Wow, I think the timing of it, I think you just don't know what Pablo is really going to find out in a given week. But like, this was one that was like kind of a curveball where I was like, where did this even come from? And looking at the information evidence that he found, some of the names that were also on that ledger of creditors that were owed beyond Kawhi Leonard, the Boston Red Sox, the Clippers were at the top of that list, being that they were the, you know, presenting sponsor on their jersey. But to see Kawhi's name on there, like the most quietest, I don't know, humble superstar there was in basketball, probably getting into something that looks a little shady. And I don't know if this is, you know, the intent of the Clippers to actually circumvent the salary cap. That's what they're being accused of. I would say if you look at the optics, that is a very, I don't know, you could draw that conclusion very easily. And I think it's more interesting what the Clippers said as a result of this fact-finding mission by Pablo. They denied it. They're like, you can't.
No, they didn't just deny it. No, they didn't just deny it. When they issued a statement to Pablo Torre and his people, they said this is provably false, which is not categorically denying it or vehemently denying it. It is
prove it.
Provably false, which means we can prove to you that your allegations are untrue. Now, what does that mean? Does that mean that provably false means we can prove that Kawhi Leonard showed up for some event or he spoke to people or right. whatever it is that fulfills the terms, the very light terms, as in no terms, of this particular deal? Now, I want people to, you know, clutch their pearls for a quick second. I'm not surprised that anything potentially like this could happen. The NBA has a lot of sponsors. Teams have a lot of sponsors. You wouldn't be shocked to see players having deals with said sponsors as a function. It's not part of it. It's, you know, part of the deal. Like, we live in an NIL world now, right?
Yeah.
Like Pandora's box has long been opened in a way that we can no longer say, oh man, he's only getting paid by function of the team contract. No.
Right.
Guys get tickets. Guys get
There's
suites.
A lot of streams of income now.
Lots of streams of income. And usually players have to pay for it, or maybe it's included in the contract. Whatever it is, there's usually some level of paper trail or wink, wink, nod, nod sort of thing that creates these things to where when an investigation does happen, you got to dig really, really deep to find something. And if you do find something, then it's provably false. Right. And that's where we are sitting. I won't say I'm not surprised. I will say this, like, the NIL world is one thing, right? When you live in a salary cap world, like the NBA is, salary caps, second aprons, maximum salaries, which is saying we can only pay you X amount of money. Then as much as that money means an exorbitant amount on paper to me, you, and 99.9% of Americans or of citizens or whoever, there's always going to be some type of loophole that you can get to get some extra scratch from somewhere.
Absolutely. And I think now, the thing that I have the question now is, like, what does the NBA do about this? Because in the past, you know, David Stern's NBA, there was going to be some punitive measures to even the thought of trying to play games with the salary cap, right? Like, I think we do have some precedents here with the Timberwolves. With Joe Smith, right? They were caught. That cost them 5 first-round picks. They eventually appealed for a couple to get a couple of them back. But I'm looking at the Clippers draft capital, and, I mean, they don't own their picks until, what, 2030-ish for a first-rounder? So I don't know if Adam Silver steps in here, but, you know, the other owners are kind of looking like, or the board of governors are looking like, oh, we're just going to let this slide?
But are they going to let this slide? I mean, are they going to look at this and say, man, we don't know about this box being open because we don't want nobody else looking in our closets? Like, yeah. Unfortunately, what happens is, and I'm only bringing this play up as a point of reference of, like, how public perception can basically drip from one player to another. When Jalen Brunson signs the below market or below max deal that he signs with the New York Knicks that can take him to the 10-year max, Then you're like, well, man, is he getting something under the table from the New York Knicks? And then you go and look at his endorsements of all these people. Like, that's the thing that you don't want to see happen, is like everything be viewed with this super critical, if not cynical, lens that said players may not earn, because it won't say this only applies to Kawhi Leonard, but Kawhi Leonard is in the spotlight. And subsequently, in the spotlight is Uncle Dennis. And for people who are part of the, you know, sort of NBA world, whether it's the media world or if you consume NBA content, which why I would assume that you are here, you've probably heard the name Uncle Dennis. Dennis Robertson, the person who has been Kawhi Leonard's closest advisor, his actual real uncle, not like play uncle, you know what I mean? Like type of thing. And he's taken over because Kawhi's dad was murdered at a very young age for Kawhi and stepped in as a father figure and someone who is his closest advisor, as I said. During Kawhi's free agency in 2019, and even before that, when, excuse me, when he was going through that mysterious injury with the Spurs and then trust the Spurs mm-hmm. doctors and went and found his own. Dennis Robertson was at the center of this. Yep. He was at like a shadowy figure that everybody likes to sort of project their things onto and like, oh, he's taking Kawhi by his arm and he's leading the operation. And, you know, whether Kawhi's being manipulated or Kawhi's innocent or whatever it is, like he was the person that everybody projected their adjectives onto. And when Kawhi was a free agent coming out of Toronto after that 2019 playoff run, we all know that Toronto wanted him back. The Lakers wanted him. And the Clippers won. The Clippers wound up getting him. And allegedly, the Lakers were very upset because in one of those meetings that Uncle Dennis and Kawhi had with them, he was asking for, apparently, part ownership of the team, a private plane and house, and a guaranteed amount of, you know, off-the-court endorsement money if he was going to go join that team. That team had just signed LeBron James the year before, and Kawhi, if he would have joined that and made that sort of a super team. My thing in general is this. You can ask whatever the hell you want. Like, it ain't Uncle Dennis's job to know, like, all the ins and outs of the salary cap. You can say, hey, man, what else y'all got for me besides this max contract? You never know. They might say yes, whatever it is. And part of this is, y'all be snitching. That's the other part of this to me, dog. Y'all be snitching.
Hey, yeah, I kind of took the same approach with it. Like, shooters are going to shoot. Like, if you don't ask, you're never going to get anything. Mm-hmm, so now, on the flip side of that, there's clear financial, like, you can't have any financial benefits that exceed the value of the contract. Like, that's right. Just illegal behavior. So asking isn't anything that's you can't convict him on him just asking. And that's why the NBA didn't convict him of anything. So I think while this can go back to Uncle Dennis in a lot of ways of like, oh, this is like more shadiness kind of tied to Kawhi and his camp, I don't know, man. I think that that's just, I'm not going to place any blame on Uncle Dennis here, because in this situation in particular, they can't really prove that this was something that wasn't already prearranged, or that he can't just come up with some, the Clippers or Aspire can't come up with some receipts of, oh, he made an appearance here, he did that, he talked to some kids, he planted a tree at this corner of this block. Like, I don't know. I think if the Clippers coming out so quickly and saying that statement says to me that they kind of got their T's crossed and their I's dotted here.
Here's the thing. Here's the other part. And I want to make this statement about Uncle Dennis because I want to be sure that we tie this bow here.
Yeah.
I want to make this perfectly clear, especially because there is this belief that Black people, especially Black athletes in this space, have like unscrupulous family members who don't do right by them, who have come from nothing and are using them and everything else. Dennis Robertson, I believe, was a high-level investor at Merrill Lynch for a number of years. So this is not like your uncle that owns a car wash or something like that, or whatever negative beliefs that you want to place, I would urge you to suppress them. It doesn't make anyone guilty or innocent. I'm not proclaiming either one. The league probably is going to investigate this. They have to investigate this because of the exorbitant amount of money that is it, and the fact that they investigated Dennis Robertson before for asking, in which they found that the Clippers gave Kawhi Leonard no more benefits beyond the maximum contract that he got in 2019. But I would urge everybody to just be careful about some of the verbiage and some of the language that you might see, but you think, oh, it's Uncle Dennis and it's Kawhi. If you want to make the Kawhi ain't showing up for work jokes, that is fair.
Totally fair.
Why would Kawhi expect to show up for work at this other job when his main job is paying him to not show up? I'm 100% with you. I'm there. I would just be very, 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 very careful. Now, what was the other point that I was going to make? I forgot where you closed it. I'm having a brain fart. I'm like an old man at this point. Damn, I lost my train of thought. But yeah. I do think, but here's what I was going to say. I got it. Do you think the NBA wants to go to war with Steve Ballmer? He's got more money than the league itself. Like, the league signing a $70 billion deal with ESPN and ABC and Amazon and everything else. Ballmer has that money already. He's like, what, the third richest human being in the world or something like that, or the United States or whatever it is. His war chest, if we're going to use the Wire analogy, you want to see who got the biggest war chest? Load it up. I don't think anybody wants to. And here's my thing in general with this. Yes, it looks bad, especially because it's $28 million. But something tells me that Steve Ballmer, who is a relatively new NBA owner, he's in a newer crop of NBA owners going back when he bought the team in 2014. Like, a lot of teams have changed hands, but when he came in, he was one of the new jacks. He was like three or four of a new age owner. I say that to say he didn't invent this. I'm not saying right or wrong if that's what it is. I'm saying whatever it is, it's not something that he was so innovative on. I'm sure it was something, if it is, that he might have peeped out somewhere else.
That's what's gonna be interesting about this. Going back to what you said originally was, is this gonna open up Pandora's box, or is this kind of the way the game's been played for a long time and now we're just catching wind of it in this situation? But yeah, it's gonna be interesting because All-Star Game's gonna be in LA too. So I don't know. I don't know how much you can really get Steve Ballmer in high water right now. Because
you don't want to get Steve Ballmer in hot water right now.
Yeah.
Like your marquee event is going to be there. And like, we know that with the media takeover and everything else, like NBC has the All-Star Game. Yep. You don't want a dark cloud over that and everything else. And nobody, like, these dudes don't hate each other enough to go to war with each other. Like, right. We see how close ownership ranks during NBA lockouts and everything else, because they can load up and go against the players real quick. They very rarely go against each other in this sort of space. Not be my rich owners versus poor owners, and that could very well be the case. You can have some more cash-strapped owners decide to say, hey, man, Steve Ballmer already got every advantage in the world already. He's in LA. He's got this new building and all the other advantages. Why does he need this? And they would be correct, right? But here's what I would say as I spin this forward. Dan, what if I told you that having a max contract is the reason that anything like this could happen? Like, what if this were a real free market where Micah Parsons could go and get his money from whomever wants to offer it to him?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if Paul George got a similar arrangement, but you know, maybe he would have stayed, but no, he got an extra guaranteed 2 years to his deal. So he was like, you know what? I'm gonna go get that money. You're not wrong. Maybe things could get a little interesting, but that salary cap makes you do some funny things, especially in this today's game. You know, this was obviously years before, but you got to makes you wonder what lengths certain teams may go to win now, because now the punitive measures of the CBA can really put you in trouble. So you might have to get creative in a certain aspect. So I don't know. Maybe Pablo dropped this now to prevent future shadiness from occurring in the future. I don't know. We'll see.
I think it's a couple things that got a tie ball on this. We brought the Joe Smith thing. Joe Smith, Minnesota Timberwolves, I believe it was 2000. For those who don't remember, and I haven't looked up the details, I probably should have, but if my memory serves me correctly, I think it was in 2000, Joe Smith was going to sign a series of one-year deals, maybe like two or three one-year deals, and then sign a bigger deal later when the Timberwolves were able to exercise his bird rights and go over the cap to sign him. The CBA was different back then. The numbers were different back then and everything else. So he was taking a discount on the front end so he'd get paid on the back end. How that wound up coming out was Joe Smith, I believe, was leaving his agent Dan Fagan for Andy Miller. And Dan Fagan blew the whistle on this arrangement between the Timberwolves, Glenn Taylor, Kevin McHale, who's running the team at the time, and Joe Smith as sour grapes. And then the league and David Stern, the angel of Stern, had to come in and bring the hammer down because David Stern is not letting any of that shit happen in his NBA. Adam Silver has kind of made it clear through through the Dennis Robertson investigation in 2019, like people may think of Adam Silver as being very soft pedaling and not being like David Stern. But in this way, he has to take a hard stance to say, you cannot circumvent the salary cap. You cannot have extra benefits, illegal benefits in this way. Like it was almost a warning in a way, like, hey, Uncle Dennis, and to everybody else, we didn't find anything here. But if you're thinking about doing it, you better, like you said, I's dotted, T's crossed, because you don't want us investigating. So this is going to be a very, very fascinating thing. And like you said, the Timberwolves were docked, like, I think 5 first round picks. I want to say it was shaved down to 3. But that essentially shaved off a critical part of the Kevin Garnett prime with the Minnesota Timberwolves, and they wound up having their best year, I think, in 2004 with Garnett, Sprewell, Cassell. But that was on the back end of all those penalties, and you had to take a chance on vets and everything else. And I'm going down memory lane, but that's just my way of telling you that even if you're desperate and bad things happen, like it puts you behind so much of an 8-ball, you don't want to be behind an 8-ball. But I do believe the league will probably wind up investigating it because they have to, because $28 million is nothing to sneeze at. And I'm sure, or at least I hope, that we wind up hearing from Adam Silver and some of the minions in the league office fairly soon.
I wouldn't be surprised.
When we come back, we're going to talk about some other basketball stuff. Y'all stick around. Welcome back to The Good Word here, my man Dan Titus. Dan, on to other more entertaining, since it's basketball news. But we're staying in L.A., or at least somewhere similar to L.A. Dan, did you see the new LeBron James Nike ad? If you haven't seen it, go look at it. If you have, I'm sure you're going to know. I'm going to read an excerpt from it because we can't play it. You know what I mean? But it's LeBron like looking like it's very like neck up. You know what I mean? Just going around his neck, his face, all sort of type of stuff. And it has like a crown that he's placing on his head. And it says, he carried the weight of every expectation on his shoulders, but he never broke. We were all witnesses. Every rival was defeated. Every idol was destroyed. He took the crown and kept it. He is the forever king. I would like you to tell me what you thought of that, because that was kind of little kind of odd, right?
Can we break that? Read the first line again, because I think there's just flaws throughout this whole thing.
The first statement is correct. He carried the weight of every expectation his shoulders.
Done. Agreed. Let's get to that second one.
But he never broke.
Did he not? Pretty sure you went to Miami. I consider that breaking.
I don't think going to Miami was breaking. I think 2011. What happened in the 2011 finals, if you want to say he was broken.
Sure, yeah,
that's true. What you want to say, broken. True. If you want to say game 5 of 2010 against the Boston Celtics, that broken, but I don't fault him terribly. If I can't fault Kevin Durant for going to Golden State, which I don't fault LeBron James for going to Miami.
I'm okay with him getting the ring. If he didn't break, I feel like if those two moments didn't happen, he wouldn't have probably gone to those lengths to do it. So to me, I would qualify that a little bit as like, he broke a little bit.
Okay, but. So, my thing is, every rival was defeated. I'm trying to figure out
that which one. I'm like, come on. Like, come on.
Which rival are we talking about here?
I mean, yeah,
Is Tim Duncan a rival?
Absolutely. I mean, yeah.
Then he went 1-2 in the NBA Finals against Tim B. Duncan. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Is Stephen Curry a rival?
Absolutely.
He went 1-3 in the finals against Stephen Curry. That's right. Yeah. 15, 17, 18. Yeah. So, like, there's that. Part of it is this, and this is where I will give LeBron some level of grace. And he went 1-2 against Nikola Jokic, too, in the playoffs. LeBron didn't write the ad. Nike did. And also, Nike seems like, which is a very smart move on their play, like LeBron lives forever. It's kind of like Hulkamania will live forever, like that sort of thing, right?
Oh, God.
Right? Right?
You compare LeBron to Hulkamania.
I mean, Hulk never, according to Hulk never lost clean, right? It was always, it always had to be a steel chair or, you know, something crazy going on.
Right,
Hawk was never losing clean back in the day. If y'all was really watching wrestling. Like, there was a tombstone on the steel chair and he claimed that his neck was hurt and all that type of stuff. Don't that kind of feel like LeBron? It's always a reason why he lost besides, hey man, I just got my ass beat. You know what I mean?
And JR over here. Yeah, like a whole bunch of
wrestling
excuses.
Is not basketball. One is scripted, one is not. This commercial is just scripted. I'm just having some fun.
Sure.
But the general premise is that Nike is setting up, because I don't believe Nike knows or LeBron knows if LeBron will return for year 24. He's going into year 23. He's going to be 41 years old, at the end of December. So you have to set up like the possibility of this is the retirement campaign.
Yeah.
That's what this feels like. It just, we can just have some fun with it. That's all.
Yeah.
Just having some fun with it.
That was kind of where I was at with it. He's introducing his 23rd shoe, which probably has a little bit of shade to it to a certain degree with the Forever King thing. But like the one issue that I always had with LeBron is like, this has all been a self-anointing thing. Like he couldn't just let it kind of just happen naturally. Like you don't just give yourself the nickname. Now, granted, he's probably exceeded expectations more than any athlete has, given the amount of pressure that he had coming out of high school. He's the second best player of all time to me. And so I don't think he needed to do all of this. So to me, this was like, all right, I got a new shoe coming out. I don't know that I might retire next year. I may not. Let me just start the campaign going just to make sure people know and I remain relevant in all this of like how great I really am. Not only to the sport of basketball, but in, you know, sports in general. So I'm not mad at it. It just seemed to me a little bit cringy. Like you didn't need to do that right now, LeBron. But that's LeBron. That's quite literally LeBron.
Right. That's funny. No, and I'm going to do something. And this is completely unplanned. I'm going to do something. I'll be right back.
Don't leave.
So no. Do you guys remember the Air Jordan 10? This is the Air Jordan 10.
Yeah.
Right?
Yep.
This is not an original colorway. This is a Chicago colorway that I got when I lived in Chicago, I think like 2017 or 18. On the bottom of the shoe, it has lists of Michael Jordan's accomplishments to that point. Like 85 rookie year, 86, 63 points. You know what I mean? It says MVP, all defense, all these different things on the bottom of the shoe on different lines. And it says in 94, it says beyond. Now, granted, this shoe was designed and came out when Michael Jordan was already retired and nobody knew whether he was coming back. So it was setting up pretty much that Michael Jordan's legacy will live forever. Accomplishments on the shoe, so you won't forget him. Little did we know, he was going to come back. He wore a variation of this very shoe in the comeback and the 55 points against the Knicks and the comeback against the Pacers, blah, blah, blah. Then he went to the 11s against the Orlando Magic, you know, a year early, got fined. The shoe was too black. Just having some fun with some details here, y'all. But the point is, this is not unusual for Nike to do when they have an athlete that is on the precipice of retirement or maybe already retirement and we need to keep this line going. So I'm not tripping too much. To your point about LeBron being in an endless search for validation. Yes, it's absolutely correct. Endless search for validation, endless, like saying, you know, in that ESPN thing in 2016, you know, when we won, when we beat the Golden State Warriors, we came down from 3-1. I thought that made me the greatest player of all time. Like that turns people a little bit. And he's got the right to say it.
Sure.
But I got the right to say that he's wrong. But
Draymond
that's not
Green
to say
not being in a game definitely mattered. Kyrie Irving hit a hell of a shot. And you know what I mean? It's a team sport.
And we're going to get
to that. I'm not saying he wasn't great in that, but yeah.
Right. No, he was excellent. There's only one NBA finals that you could legit say that LeBron underwhelmed, and I don't even count 2007, although it's on the ledger. He got it,
sure.
A team to the NBA finals that probably shouldn't have gotten there. And the Spurs waxed the Cavs because the Cavs were not very good and LeBron had not developed an outside shot. Like I tend to believe that one of three or four Western Conference teams in 2007 would have gotten the same result because LeBron just wasn't developed enough yet. He was just ahead of the curve. Yep. But I can't say that LeBron has underachieved from the standpoint of personal performance. Now, you can criticize some of the decisions that he's made, some of the influences and everything else, some of the passive aggressive stuff, but he's performed. He's balled. He's played, and he's played with the expectations and the weight of the world on his shoulders. And him and Nike have had some really cool campaigns over the years. Like, my favorite is the LeBron and Kobe puppets. Remember them?
That was good.
You know what I mean? Where LeBron honestly didn't hold up his end of the bargain because he didn't get the Cavs to the NBA Finals when we were really supposed to see Lakers and Cavs in 2009, which was a remarkable 16 years ago, just to show you how crazy all of that stuff is. But he and Nike, remember the grandpa LeBron, the kid LeBron, suave LeBron, all that? Like, they have always done different things. They've mocked different things about the decision and everything else. Like, they used Marvin Gaye in a commercial before. Like, they've done a lot of things. They've gotten a lot of hits. And that's not to say that this is a miss. That's to say that this is one of those things that is really hard for a marketing company, a shoe company like Nike, to build a campaign around when you're not sure. Now to LeBron and everything else, because Ty Lue went on Club Shay Shay with Shannon Sharp. I don't know if you saw that, but there was, you know, he said, Ty Lue, who I think is pound for pound best coach in basketball. I've said it before. I'll say it again. Ty Lue was talking about the experience of coaching LeBron. And he was talking about being in the locker room in game 7 of the NBA Finals in 2016, where he called LeBron out and told him he's not playing defense, needs to do more, blah, blah, blah. LeBron had a great game 7 and helped clinch along with Kyrie Irving. To the Kyrie Irving point, he said that he was with LeBron when the news that Kyrie Irving was traded from Cleveland to Boston, therefore ending any real chance of the Cavaliers challenging the Golden State Warriors. And he believes that in 2018, had the Warriors and Cavs met up and Kyrie Irving had been there, that the Cavs would have been favored. I saw the 2017 finals. Kyrie was there and healthy. Kyrie was there and healthy. And that was an ass kicking.
They got smacked.
They got smacked. They got smiggity, smiggity smacked by a Golden State team that everybody says stacked the deck, right? Kevin Durant, you stacked the deck by going over there, but nobody says LeBron stacked the deck by joining Kyrie Irving and then going and getting Kevin Love. We just have very funny ways of doing things. But let's take that thing by itself. If Kyrie Irving does not leave Cleveland, does LeBron stay in Cleveland? Do the Cavs wind up running off? Do they outlast Golden State when Kevin Durant is going to leave in 2019? And do they find themselves right back at the forefront of championship conversation? Or do they get their lick back in 2018 or 2019?
I don't think they were going to be getting their lick back. I remember that series, and I had to go back and do the math because I just remember them getting slaughtered. It was like a 4-1 finals victory in 2017. 2016-2017, I think it was.
2017,
yep. And the average margin of victory for the Warriors was 14 points. Mm-hmm. That's not close at all. So for Ty to say, like, oh, if Kyrie just brings it, runs it back, like, they'd be right there as the favorites. Like, if Kyrie doesn't leave, I think that they probably hit their ceiling. Them winning that championship in 2015-2016 was the best thing that would have happened to that team because they beat the 73-9 Warriors. Like, doesn't get any better than that. And you came down from 3-1. There's no way that you were going to be able to do that again with Kevin Durant healthy and that what that Warriors squad was. It just wasn't going to happen. But I think it was pretty telling. I think Kyrie knew because once Bron came back there, he kind of became – he was a second option, sometimes third when Kevin Love was really on.
I don't think he ever was. He just scaled it back sometimes. Sure. Because Kevin Love never felt really comfortable in that offense, and he felt like really like the third wheel. You know what I mean?
For sure. And I think it became a point where Kai was like, I got to move on. I don't think it would have worked anyway. And you know, Ty probably knows better than anybody, you know, being in the locker room with him. But, like, I think it was at that point in Kai's career where – you know, he was like a 3- or 4-time all-star at that point. He had his chance to win. Now he wants to go take that leadership and what he learned with LeBron and go apply it to somewhere else. That's why he went to Boston. Maybe it didn't work out to the extent he wanted or anyone else did. But, like, I think that was the point in time where it's like, nah, I'm ready to go do this and lead my own team, which I think is fair. And I don't think that they would have done anything more had he stayed anyway. So I applaud Kai for actually like getting the trust in himself to go lead another team.
I think we underestimate two things, and these are two independent things, I'll say. I think we underestimate to some degree how much pressure LeBron James has and how much he puts on himself, right? Like it is an inordinate amount of pressure in a social media world to continue to not just be fatigued by all the noise, but to continue to perform to an acceptable level, right?
Right.
Subsequently, that pressure around LeBron filters down to everybody else. And not everybody else is built to want to play in that environment. Whether it's LeBron, you know, LeBron will always say he wanted to empower Kyrie. He wanted to make Kyrie the best version of himself that he wanted to be. But it would be under LeBron's sort of control in that way. And not everybody wants to live that way or play that way. And Kyrie has said he has made some mistakes and everything else, probably starting back from that decision. But, you know, he was on his own journey. He had to go through a lot of different things. We've seen different iterations. Like, think about the different versions of Kyrie Irving that we've seen. Like, not being funny about it.
No.
There's Cleveland Kyrie. There's Cleveland before LeBron gets there. There's Cleveland when LeBron gets there. There's Cleveland Kyrie when they actually win. And then there's this Boston version that, remember, he was trying to figure out being the leader, and he and Gordon Hayward had gotten there and everything else, and then the Tatum and Brown thing, and all that happened. Then he leaves Boston. He goes to Brooklyn, and the whole Kevin Durant thing with Kyrie Irving there, and how, honestly, some of the most beautiful basketball I've ever seen with KD, Kyrie, and James Harden before Kyrie went down and before Harden messed up his hamstring in 2021. Like, that was a championship team. And then that thing went all haywire. And then at Dallas, and him and Luka in Dallas. And now there's no more Luka, and it's going to be Cooper Flagg and Anthony Davis and Kyrie when he comes back. Like, there's something very fascinating about all the different lives that Kyrie Irving, and this is just off the top of my head that I've just read off to you guys, that he's so much more fascinating than him having left LeBron. I think there's so much more to his story than that, and clearly there's 100%. A lot of missteps and everything else, but he's a fascinating figure, even if some people may overrate where he sits and everything else, but I think you don't have to overrate him to consider him endlessly fascinating and captivating as a basketball player.
Yeah, because Kai, I mean, he came in the league at 19 and literally first pick in the draft, had to carry this team. And like, he didn't know what winning was. So like, I think a part of him, and I think he's talked about this on his Twitch stream, was he wasn't ready to, like, he didn't know what winning was. He just knew that he could get buckets and he was nice at it. And so like, once LeBron kind of came in there and instilled some of that knowledge of what it took to win, that was very helpful, informative at that point of his life. Now, whether he was ready to deal with all of the social media and media hype along with that, I think that was what kind of helped drive him away from that. And then he's also, you know, obviously had a very contentious relationship with the media for a period of time after that. And I think now, to your point of, you know, seeing this evolution of Kyrie, like, I think now he's like an open book. Like, he's more than happy to share what's going on in his life and what is important to him, what he values, which I think is great to see him kind of come full circle of like a guy that was like kind of standoffish, couldn't really get a feel for him, and him just wanting to find himself and his identity and what it's like to become a man. He's a father now. So I think this is about a life perspective that he was able to have in leaving LeBron, which I think is really great for basketball. And, you know, we got to see like Kyrie go to these different levels of his game and still, you know, play at a high level throughout the whole thing. So yeah, I think Kyrie is one of those guys that's going to be one of the most interesting enigmas that we had in the NBA, but like also one of the best pure hoopers we saw. So it's great that he got that chance to play with someone like LeBron, a GOAT to some, but then still have a career life after that was just as fulfilling.
It's a weird thing. Like, because Kyrie's not the player that you would say, oh, man, he's the best player on a championship team. But he's a critical one. You know, he's a critical one. Like, he's a guy that you're like, man, if Kyrie is on like this, that's why everybody gets kind of sucked in to some degree. Some people get sucked in with Dallas. And they're like, or they got sucked in with Dallas even before, you know, Luka got traded was, man, you know, Kyrie's an ideal second option. With Kevin Durant, Kyrie's an ideal second option, that sort of thing. the thing that tripped me out, and I don't know if you remember this, I want to say it was the year after the Cavs won the title. And if I didn't know it then, I knew it right in that moment. Somehow, the topic of LeBron as father figure came up. And a reporter asked Kyrie about LeBron being a father figure. Like, you mean this dude that's 3 or 4 years older than me? You trying to say that he my daddy? When I already have a dad that I'm close to and a stepmom that I'm close to? Are you out of your, like the craziness that, and that says more about what the media, how the media saw LeBron and tried to hold LeBron in a certain space and tried to view LeBron as everybody's daddy, which I think is a very weird thing on some of the media's part. Like, y'all need to answer for that. That was wild. And it speaks to also how people think black people ain't got no daddies.
Right.
You know what I mean? So we just gonna make LeBron everybody's daddy because, you know.
Default pappy.
Yeah, yeah. What are we doing here? Like, so yeah, if I'm Kyrie, I'd feel that way too. I don't even know how we got here, but man, we'll be back with the last word in a second. People out of their damn minds. Back here on A Good Word, it's time for the last word here with Dan Titus. Dan, Dallas was so heartbroken, so pissed about trading Micah Parsons that they wound up giving P.J. Washington some of his money. But we ain't going to talk about that. He got, what, 3 years, $90 million, something like that?
Something
to help out with some of his situations. You know what I mean? Like, we do something like that. Shout out to you. But on a more interesting note, right, Michael Porter Jr., has been talking again. Like, Michael Porter Jr. is the gift that keeps on giving.
Really.
And it is amazing that the Denver Nuggets were able to win a championship with him running the streets, right? Him out in the wild. Because he says, and this is an interesting comment, he says, Steph Curry is the only definitive player who can shoot better than me. He believes he's on the same level as KD, Klay, Trae Young, and Dame Lillard. Has he lost his mind, or does he have a little bit of an argument here?
You lost your mind a little bit. Like, he can still be an efficient three-point shooter. Dude shot 40% from three this past year. Catch and shoot, he's around that 40% range. So, like, he has a case to being in the upper tiers, but stop. There's a handful of players that are probably considerably better consistent shooters than that of Michael Porter Jr. Because I think the one thing, we're going to get to see it in Brooklyn first and foremost, because you're going to be chucking more than you ever have in your life. And if you can maintain that efficiency, then maybe you can have this kind of conversation. But you're playing with Nikola Jokic standing in the corner, Jamal Murray drawing all kinds of attention, it's a lot easier to make those catch and shoot threes. I'm not taking it from him. He's a good shooter. But like, to put you in that Steph conversation and Clay, KD, pump your brakes, bro. Let's see you do with the volume that they have.
I will say this. I would have to cover the Lakers Nugget series, but because of course they were like, Yahoo was like, okay, go cover the Lakers, right? For however long they're in there. And I swear for Lord, I never saw Michael Porter Jr. miss a shot. Whenever he played the Lakers, it could be regular season, playoffs, exhibition, preseason. It could be in Madrid. He would never miss a shot against them. And yeah, so much of that is a byproduct of Nikola Jokic, but he's also 6'10", with a really high release and a really good form. Like, him and Trae Young, I believe, were on the same like AAU team, you know, back in the day, which I guess would have to be a nightmare if you're like a 14-year-old and you're thinking, okay, I'll get the little dude. And they said, no, get the big dude. And then the big dude just shoots from 30 feet or whatever. Like, either way, that was going to be hell. But I do think that to some degree, playing with a guy like Jokic inflates you just a little bit. And you make the point about Brooklyn. Him and Cam Thomas, assuming Cam Thomas is back there, he's one of those restricted free agents. He and Josh Giddey and Jonathan Kuminga, who haven't signed their, you know, their extensions on the table or whatever it is. Like, assuming him and Cam Thomas are there, that's going to be a lot. It's going to be chucking. Bad shot, don't matter. Like, they are going to be in the running for FGAs, But from a the pure shooting form and everything else, yeah, he could say he's there. And the numbers, to some degree, back it up. He shot 40% this year from three. I think he shot right around 39 last year. Like, he's a really good shooter. Unfortunately, 40% is almost like the Mendoza line in the NBA now. Like, 40% is almost like, yeah, you're barely just cutting it, as opposed to 40% being really, really exceptional. It's almost like Stephen Curry shooting 40. It's almost like, Steph, you got to make better than 40 to make this completely worth our while. And Michael Porter Jr. to be an impactful piece on something more than a really bad team. Yeah, we're going to see what those numbers look like. I just think it's a window into the irrational confidence that every NBA player has. Michael Porter Jr. just decides to put a microphone in front of his face and just tell us how irrational his confidence is. That's all.
Yeah, I mean, I think he has an art. He has a case. He's a very efficient shooter. I would like to see, I mean, even in the mid-range, he was, you know, in that above 50%. He has an argument in a case. I just want to see him deal with the volume of some of those tier superstars he was talking about.
I will say this. It's like when, you know, my counterparts, my friends in the NFL, they have these conversations about, like, who's the best quarterback? And then they just never include Patrick Mahomes. Like, oh, he's just different. He's on a different level. No. Include him, and he's at the top, and then everybody else kind of follow behind him. That's like Steph.
Yeah.
Like, nobody's in that particular category when you talk about volume and shooting off the catch and away from the ball and the amount of attention that's on him and everything else. Like, don't look at percentage. Look at the hands in his face and the bad shots that sometimes he has to take, because that's the way the offense is set up. Percentages don't always talk about everything. Like, Steph is in a category of history all by himself. Like, he's not the prettiest looking jump shooter as far as the form and everything else. You wouldn't teach Steph Curry's form. You teach Ray Allen. You teach Allen Houston. You teach Glenn Rice. You teach, you know what I mean? A bunch of different guys. But he's the greatest shooter we've ever seen and maybe ever will see. And I think putting yourself in that category is like a losing proposition. That's, you know what I mean? That's like good quarterback saying, yeah, I think I'm the best quarterback in the league. If Patrick Mahomes drops dead next week, you might be.
I don't put it this way. If you pulled the average NBA player, the average NBA fan consumer, where do you think Michael Porter Jr. would rank among the top shooters list? He would be nowhere close to that. And while he has some data points to sprinkle in there to say, like, yeah, I belong in the club. Nah, bro, you're not quite there yet.
Yeah, it depends on how big the club is. That's all. It just depends on how big the club is. But that is my man, Dan Titus. Thanks, Dan, for joining us, man. Go check out all of Dan's content as far as the fantasy world. I'm going to have to hit him up after this to ask him about my fantasy football draft. I'll be back next week for another episode of The Good Word. Until then, everybody be safe. Oh, yeah, producer Dakota, thanks for legit everything, brother.